Hello?
Dan?
Yes.
Christopher Roddy, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. What you up to right now?
Just feeding the dog.
I love that. It's mundane. Beautiful.
Yeah.
I just rolled out of bed and I'm nursing the hangover, so.
Oh, yeah?
Got me a good glass of whiskey and, you know, hopefully I can get my day started on the right track.
Uh-huh.
You prepared? How much time you got?
What's that?
How much time you got for this?
15, 20 minutes.
Okay, that works.
Okay.
You ready to go?
Sure.
Okay. I wanted to start with the fairly relentless touring schedule you guys have had since Beale Street was released. With the declining economy, the high gas prices and food prices, how has that affected Clutch's touring experience?
It didn't really have too much of an impact as far as people coming out to the shows, as far as I could tell.
Mm-hmm.
I think that maybe in general, people might have been a bit more selective as to what shows they were going to. But our tour did pretty well, the last one that we were on. And, that was, that ended just about a month ago.
Mm-hmm.
So, it was a full U.S. tour. It was over 5 weeks long, and it wasn't much different than any of the other tours that we usually do.
What about costs incurred by the band?
Yeah, that went up. I mean, the fuel prices went up.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, it gets absorbed, you know, one way or another.
Right.
Sales, or t-shirt sales like that.
Yeah.
It was doable. It wasn't the kind of thing where, you know, we were debating whether to cut it short. You know, it was a good one.
So how would you compare this particular jaunt with outings in support of previous albums? Are the crowds getting bigger? Are they more enthusiastic, especially coming off such a great album that you guys put out last year?
Well, thank you. Yeah, that the shows are getting bigger, and we're kind of in a position now where we can play cities that we really haven't played before. Those kind of cities where, for the most part, bands just kind of drive past.
Mm-hmm.
We had some pretty interesting shows. We played Missoula, Montana.
First
time. We played Aspen.
They're
just strange places that we'd never really normally thought about going to.
So have you discovered some new places that maybe you'd like to revisit because you were just so taken aback by how great it was?
Yeah, I'd say the Aspen was one of those for sure.
Mm-hmm.
It was a little hairy getting in there because we did come in when the weather was cold, and there was a lot of snow and ice. So it was kind of treacherous getting there, but once we got there, it's a great show. It was a small club. I'd probably say it holds about 500 people. So it's tight and intimate. And, when you play places that bands don't normally go to, it just makes the crowd that much more enthusiastic about you being there.
Right. Are there any locales that you've been wanting to visit and tour, but haven't got a chance yet?
Definitely. Definitely. I mean, we're kind of expanding our European routing. Just over the last couple of years, we've really expanded where we play in areas like Scandinavia. Originally we were focusing on places like Germany and Italy and France, and Germany's always awesome, but Italy and France for us have been kind of hard markets to really do well in. So we were focusing less on those areas and started hitting places like Norway and Sweden and
yeah.
Finland, and those places are badass.
Yeah.
Great for us. I mean, Oslo, I don't know what it is about the city of Oslo, but we draw larger crowds there than we do in our hometown.
Oh, and it's beautiful too, isn't it?
Yes, it's amazing.
Did you get much of a chance to sightsee?
Sometimes. Yeah, we played some places like what is it called? I can't remember the name of the city right now, but it's so far north in Norway that for about 4 months of the year the sun actually never sets.
Yeah.
And that was an amazing town.
That makes the hangover that much easier to tolerate.
What's that?
I said that makes the hangover that much easier to tolerate. No sun.
Yeah, I guess so. But, we've never played areas like, South America. We've never been down there. We've had a lot of friends in other bands tell us that Greece is the place to go to, and we haven't made it over there yet.
Yeah,
those are areas that we definitely are working on.
Great. Well, word has it that you guys are currently recording another Bakerton group release.
Yeah, we're kind of right in the middle of that right now.
Yeah, how's it going?
It's awesome. We finished all of the tracking. We recorded this album at the same place that we did the last full-length big mm-hmm. album. It's with Jay Robbins in Baltimore.
Right.
Jay used to be in Government Issue and Jawbox, and he's in a couple of other bands right now as well, but he really spends most of his time recording. He's got a great studio in Baltimore. We finished the tracking last week, and he's mixing now. He's probably about halfway through mixing. And that should be finished and in stores by the middle of February.
Great. So why did it take so long since the inception of the Bakerton Group project? You put out the three songs to the first full length, which didn't come out until, what was it, 2 years ago?
Yeah. I don't know why it took so long. I guess it's because we were so busy with Clutch.
Mm-hmm.
And the Bakerton Group has always been, something in the past. It was something that we were focusing on when we weren't doing anything else.
Yeah.
And within the last year, we've made a lot of changes within our organization. We've created our own label that's just focusing on releasing stuff that we produce. And that really kind of kick-started the Bakerton Group as far as it becoming a real band that puts out albums on a regular basis, and even we'll even do tours just as the Bakerton Group now, instead of having the Bakerton Group open up for Clutch, which is the way it was in the past. Now, we're into the idea of just touring solely as the Bakerton Group, and really pushing that as a legitimate band, not just a side project.
Right. Now, Neil, obviously, Bakerton Group is instrumental. Is Neil contributing musically to this now?
Absolutely. Yeah, we, for the last 2 years had a guy playing keyboards with us.
Mick?
On the road. Mick, exactly. And we decided to drop a lot of the instrumentation from Clutch because we felt like it was it was at a time when we were trying to really kind of decide where we wanted to go. We were adding more and more instrumentation to the music, which was great, but it kind of lacked focus at the same time. And so we just decided to scale back bare bones to the original four lineup. And when we did that, that's when Neil started to play with the Baker and the group and kind of filling in the space that was left open when Mick wasn't playing. And Neil's always contributed keyboard parts to Clutch songs, and so he was able to kind of, you know, fill in where what normally Mick was doing on the keys, you know, Neil could either do on the keys himself or play on the guitar. And it turned out that he was just more comfortable playing guitar. So, yeah, he does contribute a lot. And he plays guitar predominantly on the new Bakerton album. I think he plays keys on a couple of songs, but for the majority of the album, we ended up getting Pear from Opeth to play.
Right.
And that's...
And you play live, too, with him, haven't you?
Yeah, we did a few shows with him live on this European run that we did earlier in the year, and then just on the last run when Opeth was touring the States at the same time we were, our shows overlapped on one date, and we had him play the entire Bakerton group set with us, and I think that was in Kansas City, and that was rad. He's just you know, one of those musicians who, I mean, he honestly learned the songs, or not learned them, but relearned them on the bus 2 hours before we went on stage to play.
Wow. And, you know, well, on that topic, you guys have been around for almost two decades, and mm-hmm. there's been no lineup changes, which is, you know, really rare for groups that have been around that long. I mean, save for the addition of Mick on the organ for a while, it's been this core group of four guys for this whole time. So
yeah.
you guys have known each other since high school, right?
Yeah, we met. I knew Neil from junior high school, and then in high school I met Tim and JP. And Tim was actually a year ahead of us, so.
So how do you do it? How do the interactions work so well that you managed to remain together for so long? What's the secret?
I don't know. I think I think we all kind of have very similar personalities, which is the biggest thing. We never really have any conflicts. And I think we all, you know, are all usually on the same page. And I think there's not one person within the band that is really trying to, you know, push in one direction or the other. We just kind of let it happen. And so, you know, it truly is kind of a democracy within the group. And I don't know, we just get along.
Huh. So my wife is a big Ace of Cakes fan, and she pointed out this episode where Neil's sister makes the orange amp cake for the 930 Club.
Yeah.
I never saw anyone eat that thing. Be honest. How was it?
You know what? I never got a slice.
Oh, my God.
I never got one. It was, yeah, that was a cake that was made for this guy, Ed Steck, who is a good friend of ours. He's the general manager of the 930 Club in D.C. And I don't know. I think he ate it.
The whole thing.
You know what? Yeah, I don't know. A cake shaped like an orange amp. I mean, it looked great.
Yeah.
Maybe it tasted like Fanta. I don't know. But
a dreamsicle.
Yeah. Oh, that would be rad.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a guy's a genius with cakes.
And he actually owns some sort of cake place, doesn't he?
Yeah. It's in Baltimore, too. Have you ever seen that show, Ace of Cakes?
Like I said, my wife is really into it, and she, when I mentioned I was going to be talking to Dan from Clutch, she said, oh, Clutch was on Ace of Cakes at one point, and she pulled it up on YouTube. So I just saw, I don't know, a brief 4 or 5 minute clip of it. I don't know how long it actually went on.
Uh-huh. Well, Neil's younger sister works there as well. And that was part of the connection between them and us.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't want to get off the music. I just thought that was kind of funny, and I thought I'd bring it up.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. He's made some pretty cool cakes. He made my wedding cake.
Really?
Yeah, he made a groom cake for me as well, which was a small cake that was the shape of a Rickenbacker headstock. It was chocolate. It was great.
How long have you been married now?
6 years.
So does the touring put stress on the relationship? And what about kids?
It does. It does. Yeah, I have kids too. And it's, that's one of the things that definitely makes it difficult to tour. But we try to tour, we try to tour smart and do it in a way where we can stay on the road at least, 5-6 months through the year, but space it out in a way that it just doesn't, destroy personal lives.
Everybody's pretty family-oriented.
What's that?
Everybody in the group is pretty family-oriented.
Yeah, I would say that, definitely. We're all married.
So over the years, Clutch's music has evolved to embrace even more bluesy elements as the albums have progressed than what was showcased, in the early material. To what do you attribute the direction of your progression? And do you guys still have it in you to write a raging hardcore track or record? Or are you pretty much, on the path to you continuing down this path of more bluesy, more mellowed out? Well, Neil can get pretty maniacal at times, but as far as the next release goes, which I believe you're going to be writing for a new album after the Bakerton release,
yeah.
Do you have anything in store for that? Any new ideas? And is there any embracing of the classic elements, or, is it going to be more of what we got with Robot Hive and Beale Street?
It's hard to say. We don't have a capacity within us probably to write or desire to write, another Binge and Purge.
Mm-hmm.
But, because, that was, like you said, 2 decades ago.
Right.
And I think that the blues aspect, wasn't necessarily a conscious thing that happened. It's just something that kind of crept into the music. As we were writing it, and maybe as we were playing the new material live, we generally like to take a riff or two and just kind of play them back and forth in front of an audience and really kind of improvise as much as we can to come up with a new direction or, you know, a new riff to complete that song. And when you're jamming like that, I guess the easiest format is kind of a blues progression sometimes. And that's probably, you know, something that kind of led us in that direction. You know, and that's stuff that we're always interested in, but just never really probably had the confidence within our own skills to try to pull it off.
So when you're jamming and, you know, you're coming up with these riffs,
yeah.
How do you differentiate between, okay, this is material that would be better suited for a clutch release, or this would be something more comfortable on a Bakerton group release?
That actually really depends on Neil and whether he feels that adding vocals would make it better or if it would just detract. And, you know, me personally, it's kind of hard for me to tell if I, you know, if we start jamming on a riff, you know, I'm not going to be able to say, well, this is obviously something that Neil's going to be able to sing on. Because, you know, it turns out that he could say, you know, I can't do it. You know, this is better off as an instrumental. So it really kind of rests on his shoulders. Most of the time. Or if it's just, I'd say that in general, the Bakerton group songs tend to be a little more funk oriented.
Yeah.
Than clutch songs. And that's a big factor too. You know, if you have something that's straight ahead rock, that's a no brainer that it's going to be a clutch song. But, if it's, you know, a little more of like a jazz influenced song or a funk, then maybe, you know, it's better suited as an instrumental.
Right. Well, with all these diverse elements in the music, what in particular inspired you, Dan, to get into music? In your childhood, was there a specific experience that really opened the door for you? And what made you pick up an instrument and learn how to play it?
I'd say I got my earliest musical influences probably from my older brother's record collection when I was growing up. You know, he had things like Van Halen and Led Zeppelin and some more punk stuff like the Bad Brains and the Sex Pistols and that kind of stuff, you know, really attracted me because I was into bands like, you know, Jimi Hendrix, obviously. That was probably the first record I bought was Jimi Hendrix record. And, as soon as I heard his music, you know, I wanted to be a guitar player. And I got a guitar, but then as I started listening to bands like, The Clash or The Bad Brains, you know, the more simplified but heavy stuff, you know, really, that's what inspired me to actually think that I could play in a band without having Jimi Hendrix chops.
Yeah, right.
And then when I met up with Tim and Neil and JP, Tim had already been playing guitar for years, and I figured, well, I'll buy a bass, and it can't be that hard. And it turned out it's pretty hard, but
yeah.
I picked it up, and that was good. I think I'm definitely naturally much more inclined to be a bassist than a guitar player. And as far as influences go, probably people like Jack Bruce was a huge influence on me when I was, even today, you know, still trying to learn the hell he was doing. But Daryl Jennifer from the Bad Brains, a huge influence too.
Yeah. You know, are there any old Clutch tracks? I mean, you put out so many albums at this point. Is there stuff that, given the finite period of time you have every night to play, are there songs that you wish you could incorporate into the set list more often? And to counterbalance that, are there songs that you get tired of playing?
Absolutely. I mean, we do have a tendency to kind of get bored with certain songs pretty easily. And one of the things we try to do is not play the same set every night. Mm-hmm. And that helps because instead of playing 20 songs, you know, you can pick from 40 or 50 songs. But we try to, we also try to play what we think, you know, are songs that for the most part people are going to want to hear, either because we haven't played them in a while or because they're new. And some of the older songs we just don't play because, honestly, a lot of times it just doesn't turn out to be as, you know, it's like it's you have a song like I don't know, some songs we don't get tired of playing. It's weird, like Animal Farm. We'll play that probably 80% of the set list between now and the last 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
But then there are other songs like Shogun Named Marcus where, you know, one of us will put it on the set list like, Jesus Christ, again? And you know, give it a break, you know, but then you think about it and you haven't played that song in, you know, 6 months. So,
yeah.
I don't know. It's you know, you try not to burn yourself out, and you try to play songs that you think people are going to want to hear, but songs that you want to play too. Because when you play a song that you don't really want to play, you know, the audience can tell.
Mm-hmm.
That it's a waste of time.
It's the energy. The energy matters.
Yeah, absolutely.
So with the release of the DVD, Full Fathom 5, just a couple months ago.
Yeah.
Why is it taking so long to put out a live show on video?
We have tried to do this. We've been working on this project for like 5 years. And I think the problem was we just never really put enough money into it to really satisfy our expectations of, you know, what a live Clutch DVD would look like. And fortunately for us, we hooked up with this guy, Agent Ogden, who does awesome work for a relatively cheap price. And it was just perfect timing. He came to us and you know, said that he was interested in doing something for us. And we looked at the stuff that he had done in the past. He's done work with Primus. And it was obvious. And he knew what he was doing, and the stuff was going to sound good as long as we played good. So it was just, you know, one of those things where the pieces had to come together before it was really meant to happen.
So you guys are happy with how it turned out then?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you know, you're your own worst critic, but I think the stuff
came out really well.
And we can expect to see more live offerings in the future?
Yes. Yeah, I don't know what's next. You know, we've been toying with the idea of putting out a DVD that's a mixture of live footage and kind of like behind-the-scenes making of an album footage. You know, something like along those lines. That's probably going to be the next project.
Great. So are we going to get to see any of the, you know, behind-the-scenes blow-ups that occur because you guys have been around for so long? And I know you got them. I know you have them.
Our heated argument.
Moments on the tour bus when you guys are just at each other's throats.
Yeah. You know, we'll flare up into one of those Kentucky Fried Chicken food fights that we're known for.
So can Clutch withstand another couple decades?
I hope so. I don't know what else to do. I think, especially with the expanded role of the Bakerton Group, you know, it's weird. The more energy we put into the Bakerton Group, it seems like the more excited and the more ideas that we come up with for Clutch. So I'm really excited about, you know, what we're going to be doing with this new label and just trying to put out records every 6 months.
Wow. But, you know, I took a little bit more than the 15, 20 minutes you gave me, so we can leave it at that. That's fine.
All right.
I really appreciate the time, though, Dan.
No problem. Thank you.
Thanks a lot for giving us this interview.
No problem.
You take care, and I hope everything goes well with the releases coming up.
All right. Thank you.
Bye.
Take it easy.